Okay, so tonight we'll start with Mishlei Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Zayin. So over the summer, I like to do a few psukim in Mishlei. And one of the reasons I like to do Mishlei is because I noticed that I feel like guys don't really have such a broad knowledge of psychology anymore. It's like it's not like a big study in yeshiva like it used to be.
It's true.
It used to be a huge thing.
Like what,
Freud, yeah, and psychology in general, but Freud in particular. You know, everybody read the introductory lectures. You know, that was like a thing. You know, and I think having a basic understanding of psychology is like important. It's very important, and it helps you learn Tanakh, Chumash, and Gemara, and they got Divrei Gada and Gemaras. And having like it's part of old school, the way to approach Tanakh and Agadatas. And so I think Mishlei, it's like it's good because you'll see the Musar of Shlomo Melech. It's different from the more modern Musar movement, but it's the Musar of the Torah. And so that's one thing on a practical level, like the different psukim in Mishlei. They're like they're all like very practical, basic ideas that you should just know, just practically, just help you with your life. And Mishlei is very much oriented towards not towards necessarily changing your values in life. It's not necessarily what Mishlei is about, but more towards showing you how to be intelligent in achieving the goals that you would like to achieve. And its Musar is to try to direct you how best to be live an intelligent life. And to show you the consequences if you do, you know, if you kind of veer from the middle path and you go towards one extreme or the other, you follow your emotions and you see the different negative consequences that come from, you know, from doing foolish things and harming yourself, harming others. And it tries to direct you on what's to be a successful, happy person, to achieve what you're trying to achieve, you know, how to go about accomplishing that. So it is very practical. And...
Hey, buddy.
Darth Vader's on the phone. Okay. And to understand it on a deeper level, it's going to involve psychology. So I'm going to try to focus on psukim that will try to involve a little bit of a deeper understanding of psychology, okay? But let's start with Pasuk Yud Zayin. And I don't think we're going to have time, but if we do, we can move to Yud Ches, see how quickly it goes. I have no idea how long these will take, okay? But it's like this. Yud Zayin. Okay, so the Pasuk says like this. Orach Lechayim Shomer Musar. The path to life is to guard Musar. Musar will translate as criticism. V'ozev tochachos masa. Okay. Now, always a tricky Mishnah. It's always tricky how do you translate a pasuk. So I'm going to give you like the basic pasuk. I'm going to be using Rashi for this pasuk. But v'ozev tochachos masa is, and one who abandons rebuke causes to go astray. Okay, masa is like a funny word. It doesn't mean the way Rashi's learning it. Okay, it doesn't mean goes astray, it's causes to go astray. Makes one astray. Okay, so one more time. Orach l'chaim shomer musar. The path to life is to guard criticism, musar, shomer musar. The ozev tochachos masa, and abandoning rebuke makes one astray.
Aaron?
Yeah, Robbie.
Why do you translate Musar as criticism?
Okay, give me a different translation.
Philosophy.
Philosophy. Why do you translate Musar as philosophy? Okay, Musar. We'll leave it on. You want to leave it untranslated?
Let's work on it. In other words,
okay. Let's work on it. We'll work on it. Okay.
My question.
I don't like either one, to tell you the truth.
Okay. Archko uses discipline.
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 Interesting.
I would ask, whatever you define Musar as, my first question would be, what makes it different from Tochacha?
Okay. What's the difference between Musar and Tochacha? Good question. I'm sure, I think the Mabim thinks that up.
Well, according to our scroll, Tochacha is reproof.
Oh, reproof.
I don't know what that means. But
What's the difference between reproof and rebuke?
I have no idea. I've never heard of reproof before.
It's the same.
Okay. Okay, so now look, there's different styles in Mishnah, I'll be honest with you. So for example, like I said, the Malbim, he's always trying to understand like the difference between Musar and Tochacha and, you know, Orach and Aderech, and like, you know, there's a lot of words that are synonyms, you know, that seem to mean the same throughout Tanakh, and there's a study of trying to understand why the Navi or why Shlomo uses different words in different contexts, and you know, but like a lot of the times, and there's a whole different approach, which is the one I'm much more, you know, I subscribe to much more frequently, is that like you don't want to use the same word in the same sentence twice, so you change it up a little bit. Okay, it's poetic license; it doesn't always matter so much. Okay, it's a much better pasuk if it's Shomer Musar Ozev Tochachos. It's gonna be it's an awkward pasuk. Shomer Tochacha Ozev Tochacha. It's, you know, the Navi very often just changes from one word to the other. Does it mean this? It's synonyms. It's when you write, you know, you change it up. Now, there is a study, the Malbim, and it's, you could do it. I'm not saying you can't do it. But, you know, let's see if we can understand, like, on a basic level, before we get into the nitty-gritty of nuances in words. You see, it's nuance. There's nuances in the words. Okay? And also, to do that, you really have to be a bucky. You have to be holding in the different places that Shlomo uses the word Musar and he uses the word Tochacha and compare them. So if you really want to get into it, either you can do it yourself somehow by, you know, doing a search and finding different places, or you could use the Malbim and he'll do it for you, and that's another study. You know, he's the one who really does that. I think we have a Malbim over there. Okay, maybe we'll look at it after. Okay, but is anything else that strikes you from this pasuk? It's a good question. It's a legitimate, totally legitimate question. Okay, but anything else that strikes you from this pasuk of any insights, any questions, problems, any other words that seem out of place?
Can you just translate?
What? One more time. Repeat the pasuk. Okay, one more time. Okay, Orach L'Chaim Shomer Musar. So the path to life is to guard, keep Musar. The Ozev Tochachos Masa. And abandoning Tochacha Masa leads astray.
What does Shomer mean?
What does Shomer mean?
Okay, not good. Literal, but...
Okay, good. That's a good question.
Why not Osa? Yeah.
Right. What does it mean? What does it mean to be Shomer Musar? What does that even mean? To be Shomer Musar, to guard and protect it. Okay, good question.
It seems like...
What do you think? Yeah, go ahead.
Just another question. It seems like the first half of the pasuk is, you know, pretty much the same as the second half of the pasuk. It's just, one's like the opposite of each other.
Right.
Is that what you're...
Yeah, very often, a lot of Pesukim Mishlei, the two halves of the Pasuk are showing you contrasts.
No, I know, but what I'm trying to say is that one, the first half is saying you should heed discipline because it's a path to life, but then it's saying, you know, in other words, if you abandon, you know, rebuke or whatever,
right?
You go astray. It's basically the same thing. You could deduce from the first half to the second half.
Right. So you're saying, what is the second half add that I don't know from the first half?
Yeah.
Isn't it just like the obvious, the negation of the first half?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my point.
Okay, good question. Is there anything contained in the second half that the first half doesn't already have?
Yeah,
okay, what's not parallel about them?
Masa. It doesn't say if you shimmer Masa, you go straight, you know?
I mean, it doesn't say you're on the...
No, but it's saying... You
right, presumably means you're straying from the path of life.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
You know,
But you're not helping out.
Are you going, like, towards the opposite end of the stream, or maybe you're just staying, like, neutral. Not necessarily neutral, but not like necessarily on an active path of life.
Not a, well, you're straying from the path of life.
But does that mean you're going down?
Yeah, must.
Or maybe you're just staying.
You mean you're just staying stationary?
No,
you're stationary
without the second. Without the second second half of the puzzle.
Oh, okay. So you're saying you're not on a path to life. You're just not on a path anywhere.
You're just a potato.
You're just a potato. Okay, that could be.
Potatoes are
but
fine.
The second half is teaching you that you're going astray. You're missing. You're off. You're on a different path. A path not a not to life.
Right.
The path not to life, presumably, is to
death.
Something not good. Okay, something not good. Okay, good. Okay, let's think of the, let's think of Yisrael's question. What does it mean, Shomer? Okay, so before we, is there any basic, just a basic idea, what the pasuk in general is saying? Just a basic idea, no tremendous chiddush.
Mussar's good for you.
Okay, why is Mussar good for you?
I would say specifically, like, Shomar, like, if you guard Mussar, then it means, like, like when you guard Shabbos, it means you don't just keep Shabbos, but you make sure that you keep Shabbos by giving yourself literally fences.
Okay.
You won't do this, because if I do, maybe I'll come to do this. So the same thing with Mussar, that if you become a haughty person, you might not be the type to accept criticism. You can't just say, I'm going to be the type of person to accept criticism. Only a humble person can accept criticism.
Right.
So to guard Mussar is to put yourself in a position where if you even heard Mussar, you'd be in a position to accept it.
Right. So meaning you're saying means like make yourself humble?
Right.
So that you're able to receive it and accept it. Okay. That's good. And that's how's that guarding?
It's similar to the way you guard Shabbos. You're not over an Avera if you do...
Right.
I'm not trying to think of an example, you know?
Right.
But it's meant so that, like, you can't climb a tree on Shabbos, right?
Right.
So it's not necessarily an Isra Deraisa.
So you know something else doesn't come to that. I mean, right. Place yourself in a situation where you're able, receptive to being able to to hear Mussar.
It's okay. Like preserving the institution of Mussar. It's a way of valuing the idea of Mussar.
So you're doing what? Like, you're saying the same thing as Dove?
Yeah, I guess it's like you by you. It's like everybody has some type of investment in Mussar. Everybody does a certain ownership, so when you receive it, well, you should analyze what the other person's saying and maybe reflect on it, because it's an institution that you value now, so then you're more receptive to it.
Okay, good. Very good, very good. Okay, good. So when somebody gives you Mussar, okay, discipline, criticism, philosophy, okay. Just Robert, did you get that philosophy? Where'd you get that from? Was that from Ryan Moskowitz or something? Where'd you hear that from?
Yeah, exactly, from Ryan Moskowitz.
See if you can get a parish. Ask him to justify that, and you'll get back to us maybe next week, okay?
Good luck with that.
Okay. The Michelin Master, Ari Moskowitz. Okay, so you know we're not necessarily going to be Ari Moskowitz's level here tonight, but we'll try our best. Okay, good. So is that when you hear Mussar, so your natural tendency is definitely is like David said. First of all, you're not going to be receptive to it. You don't want a person doesn't want to be criticized. They want to think that they're perfect, right? They have a certain image of themselves that a person believes that they. They want to believe, they love themselves, and they want to think that they're perfect. And when somebody comes and criticizes them, so there's a natural resistance to acknowledging that fact. There's something wrong with me, I have a problem. Okay, so David's point is that he's saying humble, he's saying that it comes from a person's ego. A person has a certain sense of self, that he's a great person. And Mussar undermines, breaks down that fantasy that you're this amazing, wonderful, perfect person. So David was saying that if you humble yourself first and you have a certain ability to be realistic with your own greatness, your own ego, that you're not, you know, you don't delude yourself into thinking that you're perfect to begin with, so then you're going to be more receptive to the fact that somebody has a criticism. It's possible, it is possible, that you did something wrong, there's something wrong with you, you have a flaw. It's not intuitively an impossibility. A person who has an overinflated ego, a sense of self, that he's perfect, so somebody comes and criticizes him, is a tremendous kasha on the other person. Because there's an axiom of this world that I'm perfect. And this guy's saying, clearly making a mistake because he's claiming I have flaws. But if a person comes to the table, he just approaches life where he realizes that he's not perfect. So then he's being willing to receive a criticism. But certainly he knows he has flaws. What they are exactly, he might not know. So it's in line with his ability perception of reality that he's not perfect. So that's Dava's point. And then Matt's is making the point that when you show merit, it sounds like it's like an active engagement of don't just hear it, but like analyze it and think into it. You know, when you hear a criticism that somebody else says about you, is you know, you can take it on like a superficial level, or you could realize that there's a deeper idea behind it. There's could be underlying causes for why you're making that mistake, and somebody's giving you insight that you didn't have before. You know, there's a reason why we're very good at noticing other people's flaws, and we're not very good at noticing our own flaws. Okay, and it's because of this idea of a person's ego, is he wants to think that he's a great, perfect person, and that blinds him to his own mistakes, and he's a lot of ways to pretend that they didn't do anything wrong. But when somebody else does something wrong, you know, it works in your favor. You can notice another person's flaws very easily, because adarava, you want to believe you're better than everybody else. And by seeing another person's flaws, that makes you feel good. You see how the other person's flawed and you're perfect. And your own psychological desires are in line with picking up somebody else's flaws. So somebody else is very good at noticing your flaws. You're very good at noticing their flaws. But you're each bad at noticing your own flaws, right? But there's a tremendous value in recognizing a flaw you have, because if you recognize, you can correct it. Right, so Shomer Musar is Aruch HaChaim Shomer Musar is the, you know, the more a person corrects his flaws, the more you'll be able to act in an appropriate way and in a successful and intelligent manner. And you'll succeed and you'll have a better life if you notice a flaw and you can correct it. But the way you notice a flaw and correct it is not really through recognizing it yourself, in yourself. That's very hard to recognize in yourself. But if somebody tells you about it, right? And somebody tells you about it. And if somebody tells you about it, you could analyze, like Matt's saying, you could analyze, why didn't I notice it myself? What was blocking me? Why didn't I see this flaw myself on my own? And you can, then there's certain depth. When somebody gives you a criticism that you did something wrong, you did do something wrong, you can acknowledge it because you're able to recognize that you have flaws. And you can say, well, why did I miss that one? And there's depth. There's what to be analyzed and gained on a deeper level from the mussar you get from other people. Right? Okay. I'd like to add one point to that also of Shomer, just a different aspect of Shomer, is that even if you get to this point of you hear the criticism, you accept it, you say, you know, you're right, I made a mistake, I did something wrong, I have that flaw, I have that problem. And you say, you know, you realize that there is something there, is you have to guard and protect that insight, that critical insight you have to your own flaws. Because for the very reason why you didn't notice in the first place is the same reason why you're going to lose it in the future. Okay? Because so the psychological term is a resistance. Okay, resistance. Okay, that you have an unconscious resistance. You have something in your personality that makes you miss the flaw, that doesn't want to see this particular problem that you have. Either the general idea that you don't want to recognize you have a mistake, or just the particular, whatever's causing you to do that thing to begin with. So you have a specific resistance to recognizing a flaw. So a lot of people, you'll find, even if you can criticize them, there's a certain defense people have that it's a pretty annoying defense, but is that they'll accept it, they'll acknowledge it, they won't argue. Oh yeah, you're completely right. I'm a terrible mistake. I they'll admit, oh yeah, I had that flaw. I did it all the time. It's a real problem, you know. But then that's it. And then tomorrow they'll do it again because they forget it. It goes away. The same reason they don't acknowledge it. They don't in themselves, even if you point it out to them, they'll they'll acknowledge it for the moment, but then it disappears. They'll cause them to forget. So, you know, somebody could point out a flaw you have, but if you're not careful to guard it and to remember it and to keep it in the future, so then it's going to go away. The very reason he didn't see it to begin with is the very reason why it's going to be gone tomorrow. Okay? I think there's a Gemara in Brachos. I forgot where exactly. I mean, it's in the first parak, where it talks about, you know, how to see demons, if you want to see Shadim. Do you know? With the chicken feet and ashes. You know this Gemara?
Yeah,
I was like, so I think the Pshat Gemara, I forgot exactly, it was a long, long time since I did it. But some of the Pshat is demons, a certain, you know, parts of a person's psyche. You know, but the Gemara says if you do see the shade, if you see the demon, then you should like put it in a bottle and seal it. Or else it's gonna be like taken away from you. Do you know? Is that you have to like make a seal, you have to do something to be shomer. To preserve it and to maintain it, to guard it, because I'm good. But you have to do something to maintain the insight that you have into your personality, because the same reason why you didn't see it to begin with is going to snatch it away from you. Okay, so it's at risk. So you have to show me, you have to protect, you have to guard it, because it's not something that's going to stick around. It's something you have a tendency. There's a motivation to forget it. Okay, not to internalize it and to forget it. Okay, so what's the question? Is what is the end of the pasuk?
How does the end of the pasuk contrast appropriately with the beginning of the pasuk?
Okay, well, let's take a look at Rashi. Okay? So Rashi says like this. He says, Orech l'chaim, hashomer musar, hi haderech l'chaim. Okay, so simply enough. That person who's shomer musar, he protects musar, so that is the way to life. Okay, and life means good things, success, happiness, life. Okay, now, but look at the Rashi, says like this, the ozev tochachos masa, right, one who abandons tochacha, he leads astray. So Rashi says, es atzmo v'es achera. Okay, so, person who abandons tochacha, he leads himself and others astray.
I'm just curious, in terms of others, it seems like he leads himself astray because he's not able to...
Right, that makes sense. Right.
In terms of others, is it because he doesn't know how to give rebuke because he can't really accept himself? Or he leads others astray because he goes too hard?
Okay, what are your two possibilities? So the question, obvious question is we understand how the guy who abandons rebuke, he strays from the path of life. That's just the opposite of the first half of the pasuk, right? Because if you, by guarding criticism, you're going to lead in the path of life. But a guy who doesn't, who abandons it and lets it go and forgets it, right? So then obviously he's going to make the same mistakes over and over, and he's going to fall, and he's going to stumble, he's going to hurt himself, right? He's not on the path to life. That's clear. But why is it, why does Rashi say, from the Lashon Masa, not Toa, it doesn't say Toa, it says Masa, so he causes to go astray, why does Rashi say it causes others to go astray? Right, Mitsudo says it causes himself to go astray. You know, in a funny kind of way, but that's like the simplest shot. But Rashi learns he causes other people to go astray. Right? Hold on a second. So Yisrael has two possibilities of what it means? Yeah. Ariel's got one, Yisrael's got two. You want to go for it? Who's, you know, yeah. Give him a shot.
Yeah. In terms of leading other people astray, is because since he can't, take rebuke, so he doesn't, since he can't accept it, so he doesn't know how to give it. So, meaning, like, there are some times where other people hear rebuke is going to be positive for them, but since you don't know how to give it because you can't really receive it, you're not going to be able to give it to them.
Okay. It means... See, you're saying if you don't know how to receive rebuke, you're not going to know how to give rebuke.
Possibly.
See, I don't know if that's true. I know a lot of people who, like, they can't really take criticism, but they're very good at criticizing other people.
Or wait, no.
Nobody has accepted them?
Positively?
Okay, good point. Okay, good. They're good at criticizing people, but it's not going to be. They're not good at making criticism be accepted.
So then that would be meaning it seems like it would be too strong.
Okay,
like
good.
They don't want to really stop. Want to?
Okay. So you got to develop that. So why should that be? Why should there be a correlation between a person who doesn't know how to receive criticism to now he's not going to be effective in giving tochacha? Right. That's good. It's a good step. But why should that be? That's a good step. Yeah, Ari, go ahead.
So, you have to, if you think of it like this.
That's good.
So basically, a guy who doesn't accept, Musser, he's breaking the system.
Okay. He's breaking the system by not accepting Musser.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me.
It's like this.
Yeah, okay.
No, because like he's gonna affect other people by not accepting Musser, and people around him are gonna think, okay, this is the norm. This is what I should do. This is if he's not gonna accept it, then why should I accept it? Or maybe this is how I'm learning from this guy. It's just. To other people.
Maybe a better example. It's like once the whole class knows that one guy cheated on the really easy test.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's gonna get 100, and he's gonna skew the average. So everyone else is gonna be like, "Well, why is he getting ahead? I want to make sure I get 100. I don't want to be left behind because he skewed everything else."
Okay. So
I'm gonna.
It's like.
So likewise, so
it's
bring
like
it home.
An emotional contagious disease. People want to feel that way. They want to feel good about themselves, and if everyone does it, this is distorting their own reality, and everyone is going to get affected by that.
Okay, good. Very
so
good.
Was that
brisker?
It's good. No, it's good. It's good. It's very good. Very good.
I think it's like there's like a social phenomenon that kind of ties into tochacha. Like if you have like a community of people that are willing to accept tochacha or like value tochacha and you respond to it a certain way and take it and it's really because it's how you look at it, it's how you look at, if you look at tochacha as an institution that's designed for self-improvement, then you'll be a lot more receptive to it. But if there's like, if people don't know how to if people don't know how to or they don't view tochacha properly, or they view it as like an attack to their ego, then other people will also see it like that.
Right.
I think it's pretty evident, like in like a lot of different cultures. And
no,
yeah.
Excellent. Very good. Very good. Very good. All you're saying are good. Very good. Anything more? And excellent.
I would just say that like the way identification works is that people are social beings, and they connect based off of similarities. And if you're the type of person who is attached to something good, then whoever's looking for good things will make a connection with you, and you'll form relationships with them. And if you go astray, you'll attract people who have similar desires and lifestyles, and you'll breed bigger social circles of negativity rather than positivity based off what.
I mean, like a bad guy is gonna have bad friends, be friends like him.
Yeah, kind of like how Ariel said, you're breaking the system. Like there's something there to be made good, and if you don't do the good thing, then you're just contributing to the bad. There's only two options. There's no neutrality.
If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Right.
Okay, here you're gonna attract people who are like that. Okay, that's good. That's true. That is true. I mean, usually these people hang out together. That is true. Okay, good. Okay, so now I was thinking of a similar thing, so I wanted to maybe add one little point. But basically, the same idea is that Rashi is pointing, the Pasuk is pointing to, is that the guy who is not Shomer Musar, he's Ozev Tochachos, he abandons it, he leaves it alone, you can't, he rejects any kind of criticism, any kind of rebuke. So that harms others, because then his criticism will not be accepted by other people, right? And the question is why is that? Right? Why does that happen? So I think for sure, like Matt was saying, that there's like a group dynamic that's created when people interact. There's a certain the action of one person in a group. When you have a group of friends or a group of guys in the dorm, you know, there's a group dynamic that's created from the interactions of the different people. And very often the level of interaction from one person, it affects how other people relate to him, how they relate to each other. There becomes an interaction amongst the different people in the group, and one person's imperfection spreads to the others. And it's not just like through a mystical way; it spreads through psychological psychological mechanisms, which will explain one case. But it is a broader phenomenon, like Jay says, a broader phenomenon of like the cheating thing is also true. That's a different mechanism that everybody's saying they get jealous and envious of. Why is this guy getting a better grade? He's not working for it. And then you feel like you're the dope who has to study and you don't get this good a grade. That's another mechanism through envy. Envy creates a certain transfer of negative qualities. So, but there's a general propensity of negative traits and good traits also. It's both. Is perfection and imperfections have a tendency to spread amongst people. Right? That's why the Rambam in Hilchos Deos in the first parak, it says like a person should always live in a good neighborhood and have good friends, and you should always, you know, you should move if you live in a neighborhood, a bad city with bad people, then you should move to a good city. If you can't find any place which has a good neighborhood, then move to the desert, move to the wilderness. You know, it's a person is affected by his surroundings, affected by people he associates with, and they're affected by him, and it works through. It's not necessarily one particular method. Mechanism of how different negative traits and good traits spread. It's like through a whole host of different ways, but it's like it is a general rule that it does work that way. It does that work that way. A person absorbs the values and the attitudes and the perfections and imperfections of the people he associates with. Okay, so in this case, is if somebody were to rebuke you, and you either don't accept it to begin with. You deny it. No, it's not true. You're wrong. And you defend yourself and you make up excuses. Or you do the other thing, which I think the far more annoying thing. Oh, you're completely right. I'm telling you, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm totally wrong. And then I'll take care of that. I'll look into it. I'm going to change. You know, and then tomorrow, it's, you forget the whole thing and you just, you know, you just do it. And you just, you know, you're Ozev. You throw it away. You know, so it's a guy sees that you're not receptive. You're not receptive to rebuke. And he takes it to he interprets that psychologically in a certain sense of how you look at tochacha, how you look at it. And people are, even though people aren't really not everybody is studied and they can't necessarily verbalize exactly, you know the in psychological terminology how a person's unconscious works. They get it. People have an intuitive understanding of what's going on, especially with somebody else. Like we said, especially with somebody else, and they realize it's not a deep point. They might not be able to formulate exactly, but they realize the reason you're throwing away the criticism is because you want to believe that you're better, and the reason why you get defensive when somebody else attacks you and is criticize you is because you feel like he's attacking you. That he's attacking your image of yourself as being perfect and being this great person, right? And you don't want to admit that you have this problem, but if you view things that way, when you're criticizing him, he's going to take it as you're making yourself better than him. You're pointing at his flaws because you're showing him he's not perfect. You are, but he's not. And it's not going to be, he's not going to view it in a way of where it's coming from a good place, where you're trying to help him out. Well, you're a friend, and you're pointing it out for his benefit so that he can go on the path to life because he has some flaw, he's making some mistake, which no doubt is probably true. As I shouldn't say no doubt. Sometimes you see flaws that aren't there in another person, but very often you're perceptive about genuine flaws other people have. And it really could correct them, it really could help them out because you could see things in them that they can't see in themselves. Because we discussed before, a person has resistances about his own problems. But he's going to view, rightly so, that you're viewing it as like almost like a competition between you and him, who's the better person, who has the problems. right? And he's showing him he has the problems, and he's going to view you. You're lording yourself over him. You're showing him you're perfect, and he's not. And when he criticizes you, you get defensive. You don't want to acknowledge you have a flaw also. So it's because you want to maintain yourself as being superior. So then he's not going to want to accept it from you. He's not going to want to hear you telling him that that he has problems. And it's if you relate to Musar and Tochacha in this framework as a competition between people, who's more perfect, who has the problems, and it's you use criticism to attack somebody to put them down, and when they criticize you, that's how you view it, and that's how you interpret it. They're putting you down, they're attacking you. So then you're going to have a group of people who nobody can criticize anybody else in a constructive manner, and nobody's able to benefit from this unbelievable phenomenon that somebody else can see your flaws that you can't have. And then you don't realize that is flaws in another human being are obvious. A person's imperfections and his psychological flaws and the things he does wrong, it's not deep. It's obvious to everybody else what the mistakes somebody else has, the mistakes somebody else makes, the imperfections they have, the annoying parts of their personality, the things they do wrong. Okay, it's not a, you don't need to really be a great psychologist to see it. But the problem is you can't see it in yourself. You're blinded to seeing yourself. So this unbelievable resource you have is your friends, people who know you. It's an unbelievable resource you have in terms of perfecting yourself, in terms of being able to change yourself, seeing what you're doing wrong. And if you screw that up because you're not willing to accept another person's insight into you, because now all of a sudden you view it as him versus you and he's better than you, so then you're going to lose that. And not only that, you're going to cause that, but you're going to cause him to lose it from you. You know, that he's not going to benefit from the insights you have into him. And you can have a group of friends, you have a group dynamic where nobody's able to really, everybody will criticize everybody else. It's going to still happen, but nobody's going to accept it. And nobody's going to gain from the fact that your friends notice flaws that you have, mistakes that you make, that you don't notice yourself, and that gives you an opportunity to change it and go on the path to life. Yeah, go ahead, Ariel.
So where's the line in criticizing someone and making fun of someone?
I mean, there's
I was going to ask a similar question. I was going to ask specifically,
it's
like...
It's not easy.
No, but I mean, making fun of someone, I mean, like, you know, like... I guess the other person will make us, you know, will take it as being made fun. Meaning, like, I don't know, like, I'm sure, you know, when I was a kid, you know, when someone told me something, you know, I thought I was being made fun of. But really, you know, it could be a criticism.
Maybe he was doing it in a good way.
Yeah, but you can't. Some people can't tell that.
Some people can't tell
whether.
Well, are you pointing and laughing at him after you say it?
Yeah, that's usually bad. Don't do that.
I was going to ask.
That's usually a giveaway.
Insofar as you're part of a group of people who collectively value the same mussar, which is pointing out someone else's, areas of difficulty, so that they could work on them and become stronger. Insofar as you're part of a group who are all is on the same page with that,
right?
Like, let's say a yeshiva dorm who studies mussar and psychology, is it appropriate to give someone mussar in a public forum, even if the public forum is people who all
you don't do it ever do it publicly. Okay, so let me read the Rambam. Okay, it's important. Okay. Now, I should qualify. We generally don't give tocha nowadays, okay? Because you don't do it right. People don't do it right. So this is very, you know, it's really, don't take this and start saying, wow, tocha is wonderful. I'm going to start criticizing everybody. And everybody criticizes me, and it's wonderful. It's amazing. No, it's like, it's a nice idea. The pasuk is a nice idea, and you have to understand it. But you got to realize that when I say there's resistances to criticism, I'm not joking around. There's tremendously strong resistances. And just because you see an idea that I would benefit from being able to accept criticism, it doesn't mean you're going to be able to. For the next 15 minutes after this year, you'll be able to. But that's about it. Right, that's about it. That's the point. You have to be, this idea, you have to be shomer.
But why is it?
It'll go away. It's going to be gone tomorrow.
Why?
Because that's the way the Sadhan conscious works. Because you haven't really dealt with your resistances. You're just hearing a nice idea now. And it makes sense. And they're all excited. Yeah, it's a great idea. We'll criticize each other. Everybody's going to be wonderful. No. For the next 15 minutes, it'll work. Yeah, but tomorrow, it's going to all be gone. and again, you're going to criticize somebody, and he's going to get defensive, and you're just being defensive. Well, you're the one being defensive now, and that's it, and it blows up. Okay, because it's you can.
It sounds like you have personal experience.
That's what happens. Okay, this is what happens. Okay, because it's you got to work on the resistance. You got to go deeper. You have to analyze it. You have to work on yourself.
So maybe the way to work on it is if you have a couple resistance just
what?
Clearly not working.
No, I'm saying what if one way to work on it is if you have a couple resistance just a guy criticizing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great job. A criticizing coach.
Set up a couple resistance.
No, it's too bad. You'll build up intolerance
instead of like a life coach.
A criticism coach.
Yeah, listening to a TED talk before, like similar like idea where a guy was going around in order to accept rejection. He would just do things that he knew he was going to get rejected for.
Oh yeah, that's like the Muslim movement.
That he built the tolerance. And all of a sudden,
that's the Muslim movement. That's the so that's the Muslim. They used to go. I heard this from Rabbi. Okay, I never saw it myself. The Muslim movement. They used to go. They try to get a guy to like break down his ego. So he would go into like a hardware shop and like ask for like a lulav or tzitzis, you know. And say, "Well, you're like an idiot. What are you doing? There's a hardware shop."
No.
Right? And like do things like that. Just do things to like humiliate yourself or like just like, you know, and to break down a person's ego or something like that, you know. So like this guy, what's this guy doing? This Ted guy?
He's looking around. He wanted to
place himself
in his fear of rejection.
Right. So get rejected. Do things like that. So that's like, you know, that's like the Muslim movement. That's more of the modern day Muslim movement. Okay. And it's an approach. It's an approach. But I'm not advocating that approach. Say something a little different. Is you study Mishle, you see the ideas, okay? And then you think about it. And over time, you study more and more of those ideas. They make an impact on you over time. I'm just saying right now, just to be cautious a little bit, it's not going to... You can't change these things. They don't change overnight. It changes over time as you understand yourself better, as you see... You learn about the best, the appropriate way to lead life, and you understand the consequences. And over time, your personality will change, and you will be affected by the chachma, by the ideas, and by hopefully you think about yourself. You gain a little psychological insight into your personality, and you can make changes like that. It's just don't be misled into seeing a clear idea and saying, "Oh, I'm going to do that right away." Sometimes it'll work. Certain people can do that. Most people not. Most people, the resistances are still there. And the guy's going to criticize you. You're going to criticize him. Everybody's going to get defensive. It's going to blow things up. Okay. So let me read Hilchos Deos. Okay. Perek Vav plus Halacha Vav. Okay. So see the mitzvah, the way Ram formulates it. Okay. He answered David's question also about publicly doing it. So he's like this. He says, Halacha Zayin. Haruch Haveru Shechata, O Sheholich Baderach Lotova. So if you see your friend, he has a mistake, or he's doing something that's not good. Mitzvah lachzir lemutav. Ulodio shuchoti latzmo b'maizavaram. It's a mitzvah to help him, you know, return back to the orach lechayim, the path to life, and to let him know that he's harming himself through his actions that are no good. Shnemer hochet techichas amisecha. So it's a mitzvah sase, right? To give tochacha is a mitzvah sase to let the person know.
It's a mitzvah
sase. Mitzvah sase, correct. Hamochiach es chavero bein bedvarim. Whether it's interpersonal errors the person is doing, or it's between the person and God, he's doing something wrong. He's not, you know, he's not davening properly. Who knows? So it doesn't make a difference. You have to rebuke him. You have to tell him his mistake privately. Okay, it's got to be private. That's the first thing. You don't do it publicly, because right away publicly is going to bring in a whole nother set of emotions of a person to be embarrassed. See, it's one thing for a person to admit to himself that he has a flaw, he has something wrong. That's hard enough. But now to admit that he has some sort of flaw that's not perfect in front of other people, that brings in a whole different psychological... The institution, the superego, the institution that makes a person want, tells a person to live up to a certain standard of perfection, its power is greatly enhanced in the presence of other people. Okay? So a person can be ashamed of themselves, and that's a bad feeling. A person's embarrassed, they did something wrong, that's one thing. But when you're in public, the people, your friends, the group of people you're around, they become like an externalization of your superego. And it's much more powerful. And the sense of shame and humiliation, embarrassment is much greater when you're around other people. So the chances of another person admitting he made a mistake when he's in front of others is much lower than if it's just between you and him. Much lower. It's just, so by doing it in front of others, you're tremendously decreasing the chances that he's going to be able to recognize it, because now you're creating a whole. You know, he's becoming embarrassed publicly. He made his doing that. He's doing there's something wrong with him. That's a whole. You're doing in a situation. You're creating this resistance of now everybody's looking at him like there's something wrong with him. Okay, so most people have they care what they think of themselves, but they care much more what other people think of them. Okay, so it's not going to do you any good to bring in other people. And if you're doing that, right? If you are doing that, he's going to sense, why are you doing that? Because you're trying to make yourself look good in front of other people at his expense. And then he's not going to listen. He's going to get defensive. He's going to attack you. So you're not going to benefit him, and then you're going to end up getting hurt because he's going to go after you. It's like mudslinging in politics. You're hurting yourself. It's a foolish thing to do, to criticize somebody publicly, because he's going to retaliate. That's the natural thing. He's going to retaliate, and he's going to bring you out. He's going to embarrass you. So you're not going to gain from it. You're going to end up being embarrassed also, right? So it's the mitzvah of tocha is to do it privately. Okay, there's nothing to be gained by doing tocha publicly.
Is it usher to do it publicly?
I think so. Yeah, you're probably over an isser. It'd be malam penichavar baravim. I don't know if the Ram says it here, but you know, it probably does. In lochek lom hava, a person who does that.
But for a normal person, even a person who's not haughty, who's down to earth.
Yeah, Ram says lefikach tzarchad and lizar b'davar zeshel yivayish chavya baravim. Oh yeah, he gets to it. He gets to it. That's the mochiras chaveru tchiloi dal kasha. Right, you can't embarrass him. Mikanch asa lahachim es Yisrael v'kolshkein barabim. Right, it's in lochei kol mahabo. Yeah, in lochei kol mahabo. It's not just a small chait. If you do it, you have no chait kol mahabo. If you criticize him publicly and you embarrass him. So there's no chayek olam haba. It doesn't mean you do it once. It means that type of personality who does that. So it's a big deal. Okay, so it's in the big mitzvah. It's in the mitzvah of chayek tochiyach. But if you do it in the wrong way, which if you don't really know these halachos, you don't think in your personality you're going to be prone to do, right? If you're ever not sure, should you criticize somebody or not, don't do it. Don't criticize a person. If you're not sure how to do it, you're not sure that you should, don't do it. It's a nice mitzvah if you know how to do it, if you have a relationship with him, like Mordechai and Esther. Right, where he criticized Esther. Mordechai criticized Esther. That if you think you're going to escape and you're going to... He went to her psyche. You have this fantasy that you're going to survive all the Jews. You're going to be survived in the king's palace and you're not going to get harmed. You're making a mistake. The Jews will be saved from another way. And in fact, that you're going to end up being destroyed because of this. Ata be'savich tovedu. Right? So he's pointing out, but that's a real criticism that he, Mordechai, had to Esther because they had a relationship. Right? So it wasn't just Mordechai and Esther very close. Right? He raised her. They're married. They knew each other, right? They're both perfected. So that's a situation you could really criticize somebody. But just stop to criticize a person you don't know. You don't have a relationship with them. You don't do it. You know. So we'll go through a few of the halachos here. But it's valuable to criticize a person. And look, if somebody criticizes you, it doesn't make a difference. It's the greatest thing that they're doing for you. If you can overcome the resistance. You know, in your own self. Do you know? So all these things go out the window. Whether they do it publicly, whether they do it in the wrong way, whether they're doing it to attack you. Of course you're going to react negatively if you feel that way. But if you could rise above that and just who cares? Ultimately they give you some insight that you could benefit yourself, that you could go on the path to life. So if you can overcome that. But that doesn't mean you should put them in that situation and say, look, I'm giving them gold, let him overcome his resistance and be perfected. You don't do that. You don't do that to them. But someone does that to you, he's doing you a favor, you try to, you know, try to accept it. You had a question, David, or? No? Okay. Okay, so Ram's like this. So if you see him, so you have to do it privately. So you should speak to him softly, in the tone. The tone that you use when you criticize a person, it tells everything. You convey a tremendous amount of information of where you're coming from and what you mean by it, by how you say something. And if you say it in an angry way, in a way where you're like rubbing it in, you know, he picks up on that. Those subtleties in tone are a person realizes. Okay, so if you have to say it in the right tone of voice. Okay, the mitzvah is formulated in a very unusual way that it becomes part of the mitzvah, your tone of voice, which is unusual to have such subtleties in a mitzvah because it's such a sensitive mitzvah, because it involves so much psychology of a person's defenses that if you don't use the right tone of voice, you know, as I say, you're not really mekayem the mitzvah properly, and adarav becomes like an isser. It creates fights. It's the opposite of what you're trying to do. Okay. The yodio, and you should let him know when you're criticizing a person, you have to let him know she'ina omer lo el letovaso ulavi lechayim haba, that you're doing this not because you're trying to show him that you're better than him, you're not trying to get him back, you're not trying to attack him, you're trying to show him, you're just simply trying to put him orach lechayim, the path to life, to chayim haba, to his own perfection, to the chayim she'ina mamavis, the true life. You have to let him know that's what you're trying to do. You see something and he can correct it, and you're not trying to attack, and it's, you're pointing out for his own benefit. You're just saying for his own benefit. If he wants to, he can accept it. If he doesn't, it doesn't matter. It's up to him. You notice something, and if it helps him, it's great. And if, you know, maybe you're wrong, could be you're wrong, could be you jump to a conclusion. You're just saying this is what it seems like to you, and maybe it'll benefit him. And if it's just between you and him, he's much more likely to accept that type of thing. And it's done in the framework of you're just trying to benefit him. You're not trying to make yourself better than him. Okay. In kiva menim mutav, if he accepts it from you, good. Vim lav yochiach pam shnei shlishis. Okay, so that's the halacha. You do it the second time and a third time. V'chein tamir chayiv lochi. I'll tell you the halacha and then I'll tell you practically. You can decide what you want to do. V'chein tamir chayiv lochiach ad shiyakehu. So you have to do it over and over until he hits you and says, I'm not listening. You have to try to stop a person if you can. Okay, so I'm saying, practically we don't do this nowadays. Well, just a little bit, just a little punch. Okay, now I'm not sure if this is because of the chiyuv to stop a person for a mitzvah, you know. So he's doing an avera, and you have to try to stop him if you can. But it's. I'm just saying, practically, this is not the way. This is for a person who's able to do the mitzvah properly. I think I forgot who says it that we don't know how to do tocha nowadays, so we don't do it. Okay, but. You do it if the Ram also says in Ilchus earlier, is a Chacham in Perek Hay, he says by talking about Tam Chacham, he says Imra Makom Shedvar Mo Ilim V'Nishmain Omer V'Imlav Shosik. Right, if he sees a situation where his words will be effective and they'll be heard, he says it. Otherwise, he's quiet. Okay, so it means if there's some reason over here, it's in Parakei Halacha. Halacha Zayin. So you have to be intelligent. You have to be intelligent. Is you have to know your relationship with the other person. You have to see how he's reacting. If you're doing the right situation, is there hope that you can benefit him? Okay, if you see that it's not going to work, and you have a sense this guy will not accept it no matter what you say, then you stop. You don't need him to punch you. Okay, you don't have to go that far. It just means that if you think there's a chance, if it's reasonable to assume that you could accomplish something with it, then you have to really keep going, because hopefully you can affect him and help him, and you can't just, you know, you have to do it in the right way. Oh, you have to make sure you're doing it in the right way. If you're not capable of doing it the right way, you don't do it. If you know, even if you do it in the right way, he's not going to accept it, what's the point? You don't do it either. Okay. Yeah, go any no. Okay. So that's the basic mitzvah of tochacha. Now if a person who does this, okay, a person who does the mitzvah does tochacha in the best way with somebody else, that person in general will listen to him. And the best way from this pasuk in Mishlei, I tell you, the best way for you to be able, for him to be receptive to you, is if you're receptive to him. If you humble yourself, that when somebody criticizes you, you accept it and you acknowledge that you made a mistake, right? It's an amazing thing. I'll tell you this, it's the counterintuitive thing. You think psychologically, if you admit that you made a mistake, that you're acknowledging that you're not perfect and you're lowering yourself down, and it's the opposite. It's an unbelievable thing. Is people will respect you so much more if you make a mistake and you change it. People have a tremendous respect for when they see an individual who, when they get criticized, they acknowledge the truth and they change their ways and they do it. They have tremendous respect for that person. And people have no respect for a person who always denies, who always says they're perfect, and they never are willing to acknowledge they made any mistake. So it's this very strange phenomenon. You want to present yourself as this perfect person who everybody should think is great, and you're denying any wrongdoing, any flaw, and in an obvious situation where you do something wrong, you'll deny that you made any mistake. Now, why? Because you want them to think you're great. But it has the opposite effect on a person. It has the opposite effect. They think you're an idiot. They think you're just a deluded, egotistical person who nobody really likes. And they're not going to really, when you talk to them, they're not going to want to hear it from you because they think you're petty and you're just dealing with these competition emotions. You're going to be better than them. They're going to be better than you. You're living in this competitive world. And they lose respect for you. And Adarab, it's the exact opposite. A person who says, yeah, you're right, I made a mistake, I'm going to change that. And he does, and he really does. That's the person everybody respects, everybody likes. So it's very often what your psyche tells you is going to garner you the most respect and make you esteemed in other people's eyes is the opposite of what in reality accomplishes that. Right? You have to think about it. How do you view a person who's always defensive, who never admits they did anything wrong? Do you respect that kind of person? Or do you look at that guy as a deluded, egotistical person who doesn't live in reality, and he lives in this fantasy world of his where he created, where he thinks he's better than everybody else. But if you do a person, you know that if you tell them something, they admit they did something wrong, you're right, they can hear that, and they can change. So that's the kind of person that you respect. And he says he's sorry if he made a mistake, and he's going to change. So it's and then you're not unique. You look at people that way. Everybody else looks at people that way. That's the way the world. People like people who are willing to admit they made a mistake and who don't think that they're better than you. People like that. They admire that. So it's like this funny thing is why are you so afraid to make a mistake? You want people to respect you. But the opposite, the way to get people to like you and to respect you is by admitting you're wrong. You know, it's a very counterintuitive, but you gain nothing. By denying criticism and rejecting it, you gain nothing. First of all, you make the same mistake over and over. So the very mistake itself has negative consequences, right? Every flaw you have has negative consequences. That's why it's a flaw. So you make the same mistake over and over. You're never going to change. And then two is that person is not going to respect you because they look at you as somebody who's defensive and egotistical and thinks you're always competing against other people. And then three is you're going to harm the other person. You're going to harm others because they're not going to be receptive to your criticism. You gain nothing. You gain absolutely nothing from not accepting another person's rebuke and criticism of you, especially if he does it in the right way. You gain nothing. Nevertheless, even though you gain nothing, right? You gain really nothing. In any framework, you really gain nothing. Nevertheless, it's incredibly difficult to accept another person's rebuke. Incredibly difficult. Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
How do you stop yourself from doing the defense you talked about where you admit it, then don't really do anything about it?
I mean, how are you Shomer Musar? How do you make sure that happens and you don't just, like, forget it and let it go away?
Yeah. Let's say it's, like, a general, you know, meetup. It's, you know, greed or something. You can't just go on Craigslist in one day.
Right, yeah. You can't just, right. Correct. I mean, like, how do you work on that? Being Shomer Musar in general. That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't really know.
Yeah, runs around and gets criticism until
you. Right. So. I don't know exactly. I don't have any better solution than make a conscious effort to remember it. Okay. And like what Matt said, is think into it a little bit. Is try to, you know, think a little, analyze it, think a little deeper into the causes of it. And yeah. It's a good question. I'll think about it if there's anything.
In that vein, I was wondering, meaning, if going as far back as Michelet was created, there was probably no such thing as a modern idea of having a therapist. Maybe there was a guy in the community that people went to, but I would think, if it's a Rav or it's someone who's of high importance in the community, that you might be too embarrassed to open up to him.
Right.
And if it's someone that you don't know well enough at all, then it's someone who you're not going to be receptive to. So really, it's a friend. So does that mean that it's appropriate, if you have a really close friend, to use him as a therapist, or is that considered inappropriate?
No, for sure. That's what part of what friends are for. For talking to friends and sharing certain things you can't share with other people you don't have a relationship with. That's what you need. You need a close friend or two, for sure, who you can talk to about these types of things. Who doesn't really judge you. You don't feel he's judging you and putting you down, trying to make himself feel better, that he's better than you. You want to find friends like that.
But
it's important to cultivate a relationship.
A group earlier, and there's this dangerous
thing. A group could be two or three people.
I'm not saying it
doesn't have to be 10 people.
I'm not saying talking in front of the group. I'm saying, insofar as you're a group of people who affect each other, if you start opening up to each other privately in these ways, then you're kind of giving each other information about where your head's at, and you're kind of creating this idea of, it's okay to have crazy thoughts and to bring them out into the open.
Right.
Even if it's just in private.
Right.
And what you do is you raise this group awareness,
right,
but you also kind of bring the, for lack of a better word, you're bringing the Yetzer Hara into your friendship. As opposed to not opening up to a friend about this and saying, no, this is a guy who I daven next to in shul.
Right.
This is a guy who I learn with. I can't talk to him about these things. It's inappropriate.
Yeah, the Yetzer Hara is in the friendship. Yeah, you have your unconscious and your instincts. They're there. Even if you don't talk about them, it doesn't make them go away. Do you understand? Is talking about the Yetzer Hara doesn't make it real. It just makes you aware of it. It's real even if you don't talk about it, and if you don't admit it, you pretend it doesn't exist. You have instincts, you have an unconscious, you have aggression, you have jealousy, you have all these things. And if you don't talk about it with your friends, you pretend it's not there, it's still there. You know what I'm saying? You're not, it's there. It's gonna exist between you. You're gonna have fights, and you're not gonna know why you're fighting with other people, and you're gonna do things you're not gonna understand why, and they're going to be doing the same thing, and it's not any less real. It's just not conscious. You're not aware of it. So that's what I would say. It's there. Talking about it with people is good. It helps you understand. You're not alone. Other people have these crazy things also. Everybody's crazy when you get down deep into it, on their unconscious. Unconscious doesn't work in normal ways. And I think it's a good thing. You want to cultivate those types of relationships.
Does it come down to whoever you're the most, for you personally, whoever you're the most likely to be receptive to Musser from, is that the person who you should gauge in Musser with?
No.
Or is there appropriate people in your life?
No. Yeah, find your best friends. Your best friends. Your close friends. Those are the ones. Now, that's the thing. You want to, the Musser is between close friends. Mordechai and Esther. It's between close friends. It's not between strangers or people who you know, you're friendly with the guy. That's not, you give Musser to people who you're very close with, and they'll give you Musser. You want, it's part of a more intimate relationship that you have with somebody else, you can give Musser. Because like I said, it's very sensitive. It's an incredibly sensitive give and take. So it's not something that you just can do with any random person. It's something that you can do if you have a certain trust in the person. You have to trust that they're really out for your best interest. That they know you, they're concerned about you in a genuine way. So it's something that you want to find friends like that, and there aren't that many people. I'm telling you, it's an incredibly rare. It's very very rare, hard to find people like that, and you want to try to find at least one or two people in your life that you can develop that relationship with, and then you can both benefit from each other. But yeah, I don't mean to say you're not going to get 10 guys in the dorm, they're all going to be able to do this thing. That's not going to, probably not going to happen.
What's interesting to me is the difference between being able to be accepting. It's interesting because it's the ego is generally what allows you to, or prevents you from accepting.
Right.
Musser.
Right.
But so what's the difference then between being somebody that is just a low self-esteem in general, or somebody that just is very willing to accept Musser. It's
not necessarily the same.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying
low self-esteem. Right,
like someone who's like totally dependent
like
on the validation
same. I'm
of
saying
others.
Like, I'm saying like the spectrum there seems to be, well, either you're like an egotistical, like you're very egotistical, like I guess, and or you're, or there's the other end, which is what, like, which I guess could be
with the other extreme.
A
person who thinks they have every single problem, there's nothing good about them, everything's wrong with them, that kind of personality.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different extreme. That person's very good at accepting criticism.
Right.
The problem is he criticizes himself too much.
Right.
It's too harsh. Too harsh a superego. It's the other extreme. Both extremes are bad.
But I'm saying what's
they're
the
different
approach?
Though. This is not.
But how do you look at you? I'm saying how do you maintain a good image of yourself without letting that destroy it? Like that's. I think that's the challenge. Like.
I mean the middle path in between is that your value of yourself is not based upon other people. Okay, it's based upon reality. It's based upon a realistic assessment of what you are and objective standards, how you exist in the eyes of God, in the eyes of the Torah. You know, that's like a more objective value system, not what people think about you. You know, there's a practical value to what people think about you. You know, I mean, it's practically, you don't want people, if people think you're a total jerk, it's bad. You know, even if you're not, but if they think you are, it's going to be bad. There's practically, but in general, your self-worth shouldn't come from other people. And look, this is a very, everybody, by your natural psychological inclination is that you judge yourself based upon what other people think about you, your parents, your friends, society, it does. But you want to try to move away from that to judging that you should have, your standard should be more based on objective reality. The person who over-criticizes himself, it's the same thing. It's just,
right.
He's really internalized a very harsh critical faculty and superego that's really criticized him over and over. It's a real, you have to really kind of analyze where that comes from. But that's really, that person's still judging himself based upon others. He's just kind of internalized
right.
it to a certain
it's
degree.
The same.
Unfortunately,
it's not based on reality. There's two different.
That's also not based on. That's not realistic. He's got every problem in the world. He's got. He criticizes himself for everything's flawed.
Right.
He's over criticizing himself.
You can blind to the reality because you just don't care what anybody else thinks. Meaning, like you can't. You just can't realistically evaluate yourself.
You're right. I mean, in the middle, you want to be able to have a realistic evaluation of what you are, who you are, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong.
Right.
I mean, but that's the goal. That's the goal, and that's the, you know, if you have that, you'll be able to, you know, correct mistakes and realize what you're doing good. You know, you don't want to be criticizing you. Or you do some things that are good, and you shouldn't be hammering yourself for everything. You shouldn't have unrealistic expectations for how perfected you should be. That's also bad. You know, but you know you want to have some sort of middle path there. That's, you know, middle path is always, it's the intelligent ones where you use your mind and you try to get your emotions in line with reality. That's always
right.
You know, can be the middle path here.
Right.
You know, but this pasuk is much more. The problem of the Musar breaking down is much more tied to the other extreme of the person whose ego is too strong. That's usually what the breakdown of Musar.
Right. Right, I see.
Okay.
As far as like finding, let's say, like you should always have somebody that you can open up to so a certain
right.
point where you can have those frank discussions with someone.
Right. Right.
And what you say to them has real meaning because they really know who you are.
Right.
And you trust each other.
Right.
Is that something you find like from like your rabbim, a friend, your spouse, like where do you think that's supposed to come from?
Different places. You know, different people have different different psyches. Some people they'll find that in their spouse. Some people they'll find it from more like a father figure, a rebbe, you know, a teacher, you know, or like an older dorm guy, somebody older. And sometimes you'll find it from equals, you know, your peers. I think different, based upon your psychology, you should have a sense of where you're able to develop a type of relationship. Not everybody can develop every type of relationship in a healthy way. Not everybody's able to have a good relationship with a authority figure. Some people could have great relationships with a rabbi. Some people have problems with that. A lot of resistances, baggage that comes along with it, you know. That they associate, they transfer certain, in this example, a certain relationship they have with their parents onto the Rebbe, onto their, you know, onto the authority figure. If they have a bad relationship with their parents, they're not going to have a great relationship with their Rebbe. It's going to be very hard. But they might have a, you know, a good relationship with their friends, they had a good relationship with their siblings, or they had a friend from childhood they had a good relationship with, and they're able to develop that bond, somebody their own age. So it could be somebody younger. You can have that relationship. So you have to kind of know which relationships in life you're good at developing in a deeper way, a deeper relationship. It could be a spouse is certainly one of them. And you know, and then that's usually where you don't have to really work on it as much. It's usually you'll already have it. You'll kind of know where your strong suit is. You know, but I'm not saying it has to be Dafka from a friend. It could be from any, you know, different types of relationships. But I am saying that there is, you would like to pick up, if you're capable. Some people aren't capable of developing in any relationship. I mean, it's true. But I mean, you would like to be able to, especially if you can't, it's worth working on, to develop that relationship with at least one or two people. It's an important type of a close. You want to be able to have a close relationship with somebody. You know, and if you can't, it's worth working on figuring out, you know, how to develop that. And you know, that's much longer conversation, how to do that. It's much more complicated and difficult. And
because this type of mitzvah might take time to take its full effect, does that mean that women are exempt?
That what? But Mrs. Hishman Grandma? What were you saying?
Meaning that a woman doesn't have to. She's wrong because the process of realizing why she's wrong will take time.
She's pater. I hear the joke. Hey, go ahead, Yaakov.
Can you not do this with anyone? To be open to anyone's criticism?
What do you mean? From you? Mean you accepting it from them?
Yeah.
No, you can accept it from anyone. That's what I'm saying. You really should. It's not easy, but like in theory, you should. You should realize that. Bottom line is, even if they're criticizing you because they're trying to attack you and put you down, if they're right, it's a valuable insight, and who cares? That's their problem. That's their psychological problems. They're not doing the mitzvah properly. But the bottom line is, they're telling you something valuable. And if you can correct it and perfect yourself, great. Say thank you to them, and then, you know, change yourself.
Right. So why do you need one special relationship then?
Because it's hard. Not that many people can do that. Most people, even if they know, in theory, that criticism from somebody else is, you know, valuable. If a person criticizes you in the wrong way, if he does it publicly, if he does it in an attacking way, it's very difficult, almost impossible, to react to it in the proper way. You're going to get defensive. You're going to say he's just being a jerk. He's just, you know, projecting his own feelings onto me. You're not going to be honest. You're not going to really accept it as true. Your psyche is, you know, it's subtle and nefarious, and it's not going to want to accept it from the other person because it brings bad tochacha that he gives you, brings up so many problems besides the one he's talking about. Like we said, all of a sudden, if he does it publicly, now you have a whole other emotion of being humiliated publicly. That's not, that's baggage, extra baggage that didn't need to come along with it. Now he's attacking you. You bad tochacha brings along with it a host of other problems that make it almost impossible to deal with a particular issue. It's hard enough to deal with that particular issue on its own, but it's almost impossible to deal with it when all these other things come along with it. Now, you can't deal with... How are you going to deal with, in addition to this problem of, you know, I don't know, that you eat too fast, you have this other problem of now you're being embarrassed publicly. You can't work on that. That your sense of self and your worth comes from society is a lie. You know, you're not going to work on that. So that prevents you from dealing with a particular criticism.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. Is on a practical level, you wanted to have a friend who's able to criticize you in a way, in the proper way, where you really feel like he's after your own best interest, and you'll be able to accept it from him. Because just practically, you're not going to be able to accept it from anybody.
Right.
Even though you should. But it's not reality. It doesn't work that way. Okay, good?
So what does Freud say?
Oh, Freud. We'll end on that. Okay, good.